Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta, your Dana Azband. Our daf of the day, Masechet Eruvin, daf Nun Hey, 55. Our daf here has a little bit of the end of the Agadata that we've been talking about all this time about the different methodology of learning, of education, who the sages were, and what their challenges were, and so on. And we're going to come back to Erevin in on this daf, as you would expect, coming off of the mission that we began before the Agadata. So just, but one, I think, valuable observation within this Agadata, it says as follows. When it says, when there's a verse that says, lo b'shamayim hi, v'lo me'ever liyam hi, when the verse is in Devarim, Sefer Deuteronomy, the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 30, and it says that the Torah, right, is not in heaven, and nor is it beyond the sea. So what does that mean? She'im b'shamayim hi, ata tzarich la'alot achareha, ve'im me'ever liyam hi, ata tzarich la'avor achareha. If the Torah were in the heavens, then you would have to climb to get to there, right? You'd have to ascend to the heavens to get there. And if it was beyond the sea, then you have to cross the sea to get there, meaning so that you would do whatever it took to get to be able to learn Torah. But the idea here is that it's not, right? That it's right there for the taking. In fact, here it is on our podcast. Here it is for the taking. And that is the way we need to relate to it, that it is not something beyond our ability or something that we need to reach. Let me be careful here. We do reach and grasp to strive in Torah learning for sure, but the idea that we can certainly find it and access it and work hard to get to know it even better, and the idea is that it is not supposed to be remote from us. Now, Rava says something else. Rava Amar lo b'shamayim hi, lo tematzei b'mi shemagbia da'ato ala k'shamayim, v'lo tematzei b'mi shemarchiv da'ato ala k'yam. Rava says that when the Torah says it's not in heaven, it means that somebody who puts their mind over like the heavens, meaning somebody who thinks that they are above Torah and they don't need any teacher and they don't need anything to help them understand it, well, that is not the nature of Torah. And likewise, if it's somebody who says I don't have to work to expand my mind over it, like the sea, right, the vastness of the sea, because you think you know everything already about the topic at hand. Then the implications that the Torah verse is saying, no, that's not the case. Don't be so arrogant to think that you know everything here, that there is much to be gained from delving in, right, with people who are better, more experienced than you are, and will show you the way, and that your mind is not already beyond. And then Rav Yochanan has another interpretation. Rav Yochanan Amar lo b'shamayim hi, lo tematzei b'gasei ruach v'lo me'ever liyam hi, lo tematzei b'sacharnim lo b'tagarim. Rabbi Yochanan says that when the Torah is not to be found, it says that it means lo bashamayim hi, it is not to be found amongst the haughty, those who themselves would present themselves as being so, in fact, in heaven or beyond the sea, that is not to be found among the merchants or the traders who are always traveling. And maybe those are the same people who did not have time to study Torah properly, right? Meaning extensively, and therefore don't rely on them to be your Torah authority. The first point, Rabbi Yochanan's first point about the arrogance or the haughtiness is very similar, of course, to Rav's point. This idea that not everybody is going to be well versed in Torah, so that's not those are the people not to seek it out from. That wasn't English, right? But the idea that you look for Torah amongst those who are able to take the time to delve in is again, quite a different point from Rav, but also quite a different point from the initial apparent interpretation of Rav Avdimi, or there's no Rav Avdimi Bar Chama Ber Dosa, right? Who says that it's not so beyond what we can achieve. So all of this, of course, is to make the point that we should all be learning Torah. That's at some point that's the bottom line, and that's going to be Chazal's repeated bottom line.
Right, but this pasuk we just have to keep our eye on because it's going to be used in a variety of different contexts. And it's interesting to see how they keep coming back to this pasuk of lo bashamayim hi, right? So I think that's, I don't think this is the usual context or way that we tend to use it. But we'll get to those gemaras later. All right, I think we're back to halacha finally after a very maybe welcome diversion with some nice agadata in the last few pages. And to get back to the topic of our Mishnah, right, we're basically now going to be discussing how do we determine sort of the boundaries of a city, right? Like, because we know cities are not, you know, they don't have straight boundaries or straight lines. And how exactly do we determine it? So that's what the major chunk of this staff deals with. Obviously, I'm not going to read all of it, but I'll just read a couple of highlights from it. So Tana Rabbanan. So they quoted Tosefta here. Ketzed ma'abrin et ha'arim, right? How do you extend the boundaries of a city, right? So aruka, so if it's long, right? And, you know, meaning like it's in the shape of, let's say, a rectangle, kamuchahi, right? So that's easy, right? Then it's just it as is, right? It has a very clear boundary. Agula, if it's round, osin la zaviot, right? And if it's round, we make it corners for it. So basically you're making it a square, and then that's how the tuchum is measured. But now here's, we know that that's really not how most cities look. Hayta rechava mitzad echad, ukitzara mitzad echad, ro'ina taki iluhi shavet. But let's say it's wide on one side and narrow on the other side, right? We basically, we're going to add to the narrow side and just basically say, no, it's, you know, all one shape. So that's basically what's going to happen here, is that what the Gemara is going to go through is how do we even out, you know, not straightforward or even shapes. All right. So now they go on. Haya bayit achad yotzin kamin pigum. Right. Let's say one house, right, like you have on the edge of the city, there's a house of dwellings and one juts out a little bit. Okay. Like a pigum, like a turret. O shnei batim yotzin kamin shnei pigumin. Or you have two houses that sort of go out like that. Ru'ina tan ki ilu chut matuach alehen. So you look at it as though it's a cord stretch over sort of the edge of the city. Okay. Umodeid mi menu ulahan alpaim ama. And you measure from there 2,000 amot. So in other words, you gain space because you're going to use it by whatever is on the edge. You're going to allow those things that sort of jut out to add space to it. And that's from where you'll count the 2,000 amot. Haita asya kamin keshet o kamin ga'am, agama, right? So let's say it's shaped like a bow or like the Greek letter gamma, right? So people know what that looks like. So we fill in, right, that curved area, we fill in that blank area as if it was all filled with houses, right, and courtyards. And we measure from there. So we see that one of the goals here that's happening is we're always trying to increase space instead of decreasing space. And again, I think that makes sense because we've said all along, right, that Erev is Lahaka, right, that we do whatever is going to sort of make it easier. I also think just in terms of measurements, it's a much easier way to handle something. Okay, and now I'm going to jump down all the way onto Amud Bet, which now is going to give, it's going to talk about different types of structures, and they quote another Tosefta, right? What they're dealing with a question of, what do you do if you have two partitions, and there's a roof over it, right? So in other words, if that was a structure that was on the limit, right, on the outer edge of a town, do you consider that to be a house or not? So now they're going to talk about all different types of structures that are not traditional houses. What was interesting to me about this particular passage is some of the types of residences that people had. Toshma, right? So here's a Tosefta. Ela mishamit abirin ima. So these are basically, you know, structures that could be included in the, you know, extension of a city. Nefesh sheyeshba arba meot al arba meot, right? So a nefesh is like a monument that would be over a grave that is 4x4, right? Amot v'hagesher v'hakever sheyeshba hem beit tira, right? Or a bridge or a grave, right, which has a residence inside of it. O beit kineset sheyeshba beit tira, or a shul that has a residence in it. L'chazan, for the chazan. Ubeit avodah zarah sheyeshba beit tira lakomrim, right? Or a temple for avodah zarah that also has inside of it a residence for their priest. Vaha uvaot vahatzarot shabasadot v'yeshbahem beit tira, right? Or stables or storehouses that have a residence. So, you know, vahabur ganin shabitocha, and also small watchtowers that are in the field, because remember, a watchtower people would live in overnight. Ba'bayit shabayam, and a house that's in the sea, hare elo mitbarimima, right? And a house that's on an island in a sea, right? Which would have to be within, basically, we talked about, this was mentioned before, the karpaf, right? Within 70 amot of the city. All of this would be included in the city structure. So what's interesting is that again, there's this theme of residence, right? When it comes to the tehillim. So we are going to allow some of these sort of unusual structures that could be on the edge, as long as it somehow has like a recognizable piece of a Beit Dira. We don't care if it's Jewish. We don't care if it's non-Jewish. We don't care if it's part of a grave, right? But notice the theme here is the Beit Dira. And I think that's consistent with the whole theme of Eruv Tehumim, right? Before we were talking about how you establish residence. So now to measure the Tehum, right, consistently, we have to show that this has, it's a potential place of residence. And then the Gemara goes on and gives a list now of things that, Ve'elu Shein She'ein Mitzvah Rinimah, right? These are the ones that we don't use, right? And so it's essentially sort of the inverse of the list we had before, right? So it would be a bridge and a grave that don't have a residence, a Beit Knesset that doesn't have a residence, a Avodah Zarah temple that doesn't have a residence, right? These stables and storehouses that don't have a residence. Other new things that they mention here is a bor, b'siach u'me'arah, b'gedzer, b'shovach, shebetocha, right? A cistern, a ditch, a cave, a wall, a place where they keep the birds in the field, v'habayit shebasfina, a house that's on a boat. Ein elu mit'abrin ima, right? These are not considered to be structures that we would consider, that we would put as part of the boundary of the city. So it's just interesting to see the sense of geography that they had, and also how they, clearly from the first chapter we read in Amud Aleph, they're doing whatever they can to extend the boundaries of the city and make the Tehum bigger. And on this Amud Bet, the theme clearly is the Beit Dira, right? It has to show those little houses that could be on the edge of a town have to show residence.
It's interesting to me that, for all that we've been talking, nonstop about establishing residence by, taking a step in the direction that you might want to walk, right, the next day type of thing. Here, we're really talking about residences, right, that this is really where people live. And then the question is, how do we extend beyond that to call this, the city for the sake of the tum that will go out of it? And I find this whole thing, I feel like I'm still trying to wrap my mind around, I'm not sure what the piece of it is that, that will explain to me why, I'm not sure. I'm missing some very small piece, literally a small piece, right? We're filling in the pieces of it down, right? That like, I don't, right? I understand that there's no city that's a perfect shape, right? So the idea that we fill in that shape for the sake of Tchum is interesting to me.
Right, but you would think, but how specific they are with these types of structures, like you would just think it would be like you take the farthest out structure and just go from there.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Like the surveyor, right, who we mentioned before, right, would sort of have to go out and make a determination about each structure. So I understand what you're saying. You're missing something. There's almost... It's consistent with the idea of residence, but it makes it more complicated in a way that seems bizarre.
A little bit. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Now, our Gemara moves on from this topic or sidesteps it, I guess, a little bit. And it begins to talk, it embarks on a discussion of those who are living in huts, which seems to be appropriate as we embark on our Sukkot holiday. But they're not called Sukkot here. They're called Tzrifin. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Yoshevei Tzrifin v'holchei midbarot. Rav Yehuda said that Rav said that there are those who dwell in huts. Right now we're talking about, let's say, people who are traveling, and so they'll end up kind of, I don't know, staking out a location in a deserted house, let's say a deserted shack, so that they can be there just for a very small amount of time. And then there are holchei midbarot, the people who traverse the desert. And here's where it gets interesting: chayehen enan chayim, their lives are not lives, which is perhaps demeaning. And the implication is, of course, that they're leading very difficult lives, right? They don't have themselves situated in a stable home life, because in some way they are wanderers and fine. So that they don't have, a permanent place to put their head, so to speak. And then this is where it gets even, let's call it spicier. And their wives and their children are not always their own. So the Gemara is going to explain this a little bit further as we go on, but the straight up, shot of that is a little bit concerning, right? That their wives and their children are not their own while they're traveling, or are they in fact traveling with their families? That would seem to be not the case. So this goes on to say as follows: Tani Nami Hachi. They also learn this Braita. Eliezer Ish Biria Omer Yoshvei Tzrifin Kyoshvei Kvarim. So they take the same point and maybe even make it further. This take it further. This is from a Braita where Rav Elazar of Birya says that the people who dwell in these huts are like those who dwell in graves. About their daughters, he said, meaning this is still Elazar of Birya would say, Arur shochev im kol behemah. Cursed is one who sleeps with the behemah. Now, that statement, of course, is a pasuk. It's a verse from Devarim. And the fact that we have actually prohibition against bestiality is the basic pshat of that verse, right? That is the plain sense of that verse. But in this case, he's taking it out of context and using it as perhaps a supreme insult against the daughters of the people who will dwell in the huts, which, right, to call them animals. My taima, the Gemara says, what is the reason for this? Right, why make this very harsh statement? Ula Amar She'ein Lahen Merchatzaot. Ula says they do not have bathhouses, meaning because they're out in the desert or they're out on the trail, and they would have to go a significant way away from these little huts to go bathe. And therefore, right, then the implication is, doesn't say this quite straight out, Ula doesn't say this straight out, but the implication is that while they're away, their wives are playing, right? Meaning that there's adultery going on, and that means that the children are really not their own, which is, again, it's a slur on them for not being home. And it's interesting to me that it's not a slur on their wives. Rabbi Yochanan, but it does, of course, become a slur on their daughters. And again, it's interesting to me that it's not a slur on their sons. Rabbi Yochanan Omer Mipnei Shemargishin Ze Leze B'Tzvila. So Rabbi Yochanan, in his, this is a discussion between Ula and Rabbi Yochanan, or it's set up that way. Rabbi Yochanan says, because they sense, so Margishin ze leze b'tvila, they sense one another when each other immerses, meaning to do tvila in a mikveh, right? The women have to go a significant distance to dunk in a mikveh, because, and then everybody knows when everybody's going to dunk, and then they lose that kind of privacy. And then at that point, you could worry that somebody who is not the woman's husband could take advantage of the fact that she has just gone to the mikveh, which is kind of an advertisement for the fact that she is now Tahor, right? If everybody knows that she's gone to the mikveh and everybody knows that she is now for sure Tahor, at least that night, right? So then that same man can then come and engage in adultery with her, right? Taking advantage of her or the fact that she's alone because her husband is not home. Again, this is a slur against the husband for being this kind of traveler. My benayhu, what's the difference or what's the point of departure between Ula's opinion and Rabbi Yochanan's opinion? Iki benayhu, nahara d'samich leveita. Well, the Gemara says, well, the real difference is what happens to if you have somebody who has, in fact, a river that is right by their house, then that might be okay for dunking, but it's not going to be okay for the Beit HaMerchatz. So it's not going to be a place to go clean yourself in terms of, I guess, because the river maybe wasn't so clean. So then the women themselves would not go far to dunk for mikveh, but the men would still have to walk pretty far to go get clean. That is a very, very practical difference, but it does not to me explain the slurs here. It does not explain why this is such a harsh statement against the husbands who are traveling, against the daughters of the husbands, which again I understand the implication that maybe it's not really their children because maybe there was, rape or adultery in his absence, but it's still rather, I don't know, the abrasiveness here.
This to me, there's like, I think I read this. It's like referring to some type of group of people. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's like nomadic Jews of some sort, and they're being, in a way they're being looked down upon. I don't know. Like, that's what I, it's like sort of, I don't want to, it's not like country people, but there was obviously some group of people, who sort of lived by themselves and were not fully integrated in, let's say, more mainstream city and village life.
But the wives seem to have been, right? I mean, the
Yeah, I
wives and
agree with you. It's a
children
very,
family seem to be
it's
in
a
the
very
village.
weird passage. And it's like one of those things I'm like, oh, I never heard of this in the Gemara before.
Right? We'll
So
need
I'm
to find out
curious if we'll
the
see.
backstory.
Right. We
Exactly.
have to find out the backstory. And again, one of these like, oh, I wish I had time, but there's no time with the daf. I'm curious if we'll see this again.
Yoshevet Srifin. Listen out for that. If you discover anything, let us know. There's one little last piece on this daf that I just want to say because it's so modernish. It's such exactly a contemporary comment. And for all that we're seeing so much that is not, contemporary for our lives, this is very much, it could have been written today. Amar Rav Huna, kol ir she'ein ba yerek, ein talmid chacham rashai lador ba. Any village, Rav Huna says, that any city that does not have vegetables in it a Torah scholar cannot live there. Meaning, if there's no vegetables in your in the village, then the Talmidei Chachamim cannot live there. L'meimer d'yerek ma'alya. Is it because the vegetables are so good for you, so healthy? V'hatanya shlosha marbin et hazevel. Didn't we already learn that there are three things that it says it increases waste, right? Namely, v'kofafina t'koma v'notlina chad mechamesh me'ot me'ma'or enav shel adam ve'elohein. It says we've learned that there are three things that increase waste and bend a person's stature, and then also take out the light of a person's eyes, meaning, I don't know, I guess diminish their energy or their acumen. And now I'm just very briefly jumping on to the next daf, right? And it is patkever, it's coarse bread, shecher chadash, new liquor or new beer maybe, the hayerek, the yarak, sorry, and vegetables, right? Which suggests that vegetables are in fact harmful to your being. Lokasha ha betome vakarte, ha beshar yarke. So the Gemara says, don't worry about it. The statement of Rav Huna is talking about garlic and leeks, which again are quite seasonable at this time. And Kidatanya Ashum Yerek, Kreshin, Chatsi Yerek, Nirin Snon, Niresam, Chayim. Right? There are some vegetables that are considered beneficial and healthy, and some which are not. In this day and age, we of course know that many of those that might not have been considered healthy back then are now considered healthy. And then I love this line. If you've seen a radish, you have the elixir of life, right? Meaning it is the drug of life. And so I don't know how many people relate to radishes like that today, but perhaps we should.
Well, I may live with a child or two who just hold by the blanket statement of vegetables are not healthy for you. That's our last discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this stuff on the Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.